We're on page 134, four lines from the top, towards the end of Aesthetic Dalad. We were discussing the question of, so now in the Mishnah, you had a three-way machlokas of where you say Havdalah in Shemoneh Esrei on a regular Motzah Shabbos. I said it a little wrong yesterday. You had Rebbe Eliezer says you say it in Modim. The Tanakhama actually says you say it in the Bracha HaTachonin, which is how we do. Rebbe Akiva says you actually say it as a separate Bracha. According to him, on Motzah Shabbos, you would have 20 Brachas in Shemoneh Esrei. Anyway, the Gemara says, of course, on a regular Motzah Shabbos, the Halacha is like the Tanakhama. So you say it in the Bracha HaTachonin. What about when Shabbos goes into Yom Tov and there's no Bracha HaTachonin? So where are you saying it? So the Gemara have discussed the possibility that maybe, in fact, in that case, we would do like Rabbi Eliezer and say it in Moedim. And we discussed the various possibilities. Does Rabbi Yochanan say that's the actual halacha? Does he say that maybe only if a yochid asks to do it, then we tell him yes, but otherwise not? Does it maybe only that b'diyeved, somebody does it, we don't make him repeat Shemoneh Esrei? So now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosef, I know lo hai yadayna v'lo hai yadayna. So Rav Yosef says, I don't know about anything of the above. I don't know about this nirin and matim and modim and anything like that. Elam the Rabu Shmuel yadayna. What I do know, says Rav Yosef, I know what Rab and Shmuel said, detakinu lon maganisa b'bavel. They set up for us in Bavel, both Rab and Shmuel, were Rosh Yeshiva in Bavel. They set up for us a pearl, a precious pearl of a tefillah, which we say in Atav HaChartonim. So the same way as on a regular Motzah Shabbos, we say it in Atachonin, the first of the middle brachas. The same way when it's Yom Tov, we say it in the middle bracha of Shemoneh Esrei. What's the point of mentioning that it was in Bavel? We know Rav and Shmuel lived in Bavel. Now Shor explains the point is because in Eretz Yisrael they would have had less need for it. Given that in Eretz Yisrael, most Yom Tovim are only one day, it happens far less often that you have a Yom Tov on Motzah Shabbos. In Bavel, where all of them are two-day Yom Tovim, then you have it comes out much more often. So what was the takana? What was the nusach? Batodienu Hashem alakenu as mishpatei tzidkecha, page 134. Batodienu Hashem alakenu as mishpatei tzidkecha. Hashem, you made us aware of your righteous judgments. Batlamdenu lasis chukar etzenecha. You taught us to fulfill the commandments of your will. Batanchilenu zmanei sosin. You gave us as an inheritance times of joy. Bechage nidava and yom tovim of nidava of voluntary Yom Tovim. Marashar explains that that phrase refers to the second day Yom Tov. The very fact that in Chutz La'aretz we have a second day Yom Tov where we're not chayiv in it min HaTorah, and the Chachamim are the ones who established it. That's what we mean by the words v'chage nidav. But Torishenu, and we continue, that you bequeathed us, you made us inherit Kedushas Shabbos, the Kedusha of Shabbos, the honor of the Yom Tov, and the celebration of the Regel. We continue being Kedushas Shabbos, the Kedushas Yom Tov Vivdalta. You separated between the Kedusha of Shabbos and the Kedusha of Yom Tov. You made holy the seventh day more than the other 6 days of work. You've made holy and separated your Jewish people with your Kedusha. That's the Nusach. And then we continue Ratit and Lanu as the regular Nusach of Yom Tov Shemoneh Esrei. Here the Gemara has left out a couple of phrases in the Sidurim. We have a bit of a longer nusach. Marashah refers over here to an interesting Tosfos in Psachim. So the last Perek of Psachim, Perek Ayre Psachim, has many of the dinim of Kiddush and Havdalah in it. So in there, the Gemara mentions that when you say in this bracha of Havdalah, you have to have a minimum of three things that you say that Hashem separated one from the other, and then a maximum of seven. So a regular Motzah Shabbos, when we say Havdalah, we have three of them. Hamavdu ben Kodesh l'Chol, ben Or l'Choshech, ben Yisrael la'Amin. Ben Yamashvi l'Shesh Zimam Ma'isa doesn't count because that's basically just in order to have Me'ein Chasima Samoch Chasima. Whenever you're saying a bracha that ends with Baruch Ata Hashem, you always have to have something right before it that's on the same theme. So since we finish Hamavdu ben Kodesh l'Chol, then we have to have right before it a Kedusha between the Kedusha, a distinction between the Kedusha of Shabbos and of weekdays. So Tosfos mentions there in Arab Sochim an interesting point that Rabbeinu Chaim asked Rabbeinu Tam. So why is it that we have on Motzah Shabbos going into Yom Tov here in Batodienu and also in the Nusach of the Bracha of Havdalah that we say as part of Yak Nahaz, we make it much longer. We add all these extra details of what Hashem separated. Why is that? So Rabbeinu Tam told them, because since the Gemara says there, the maximum number of Havdolos that you can have is seven. So we actually say a Nusach that has seven brachas in it, that has seven Havdolos in it. So we say Hamalda ben Kodesh Lachoyl, ben Ur Lachoshech, ben Yisrael Amim, ben Yemashvi Lashesh Mea Maise. Then we continue, especially for Yom Tov, ben Kedushas Shabbos, the Kedushas Yom Tov Vidalta, which refers to the fact Tosfos says that on Shabbos you can't do any Malachas, and on Yom Tov you can do Malachas Eichel Nefesh. Then we continue that you distinguish the seventh day from the other 6 days. That refers actually to the fact that that on Yom Tov you can do certain malachas, but not very many, whereas on Chol HaMoed you can do many more. So those two all count as one havdalah between certain days and certain other days. Then we continue. We finish Hivdalta b'kidashta samfei Yisrael b'kidashasecha, which the Gemara mentions over there, that you have two divisions within the Jewish people themselves, between Kohenim and Leviim, and between Leviim and Yisraelim. So by saying Hivdalta b'kidashta, then we're hinting at both of those distinctions, and therefore we have a total of seven. So Rabbeinu Tam says, on a Motzei Shabbos that goes into Yom Tov, we want to have, for the Chavivus, for the preciousness of Yom Tov, we want to have more mentions of the various Havdolos, of the various divisions that Hashem made in the world between one thing and another. So the same thing over here in Batei Dien, same idea. Mishnah says, if a person says in his tefillah, now you have, keep in mind that, you know, we're talking back when the nusach of Shemoneh Esrei is more or less fixed. Even then, I mean, you had different nuschos, just as you have different nuschos nowadays, but you also had that a person could add his own tachanunim in various places in davening. So a chazan might do that. In later times, those became the piyutim, which we say is a standard thing. Chazonim would make those up. And so forth. So suppose a person is saying this tefillah, he says, Al kan sipo yagir rachamecha. So he's saying, Hashem, you are so merciful, your mercy extends, your rachamim extends even to a bird's nest, that you gave us the mitzvah of shiloh hakam. Or he says, Val toiv yizachar shmecha. Or he says that your name should be remembered for the good that you do for us. Or he says moedim, moedim, or he says twice the word moedim. In all those cases, mashakinoso, we tell him to be quiet, because each of those, in one way or another, as the Gemara is going to explain, is inappropriate. So let's figure out. So the Gemara says bishlema moedim, moedim, mashakinoso. Let's work from the end to the beginning. We understand why saying moedim, moedim is no good, and we tell him right away to be quiet. Mishum nemechse, kibbeiz rishuyis, because it looks like he's claiming that there are two gods. He's first thanking one and then the other. Va'al tov yizachar shmecha, when he says your name should be remembered on the good, nami mashma ala tova v'loy ala ra, that would imply that we only have to mention Hashem's name and acknowledge Hashem for the good, but not for the bad. Utnan, and we learn in the Mishnah later in the Masechta that it's not so. Chayev adam levarach ala ra k'shem shemavarach ala tova. A person is obligated to thank Hashem to bless Hashem for the bad, just like for the good, which the Gemara mentions over there means v'kabuli besimcha. It means to accept both of them besimcha, realizing that they're both things that Hashem has planned for us. So we understand why those two expressions are no good. Ella al kan sipo yagir rachamecha my time aloy. What's wrong with mentioning the fact that Hashem has rachmanus on the bird's nest? So Ula says that two amiroyim in the west, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, argued what the problem is with that phrase. And their names are Rabbi Yosi bar Ovin and Rabbi Yosi bar Zvira. Chad Omer, one of them says, the problem is, because you're making jealousy among Maisa Bereshis. What are you saying? Hashem has Rachmanus only on the birds. What about all the other creatures that Hashem made? So therefore, it's not an appropriate thing to say. Which, in other words, Marusha says, according to that opinion, you would say, fine, the mitzvah itself is because of Rachmim, but it's not appropriate to mention in tefillah. Everything was created with Rachmim, and Hashem has Rachmim over everything. V'chad Omer, the other one, actually, there is an interesting explanation the Meiri says in this connection. You have Bechlal, the question, the famous question that's come up at least since the times of the Rishonim. When we talk about Ashgacha Pratis of Hashem, does that extend only to human beings, or does it extend also to all creatures? So we, you know, we're after the time of the Baal Shem Tov. He taught the idea of Hashgacha Pratis on every nivra individually, even the way a leaf blows off the tree. So the whole Jewish world pretty much has accepted it, and it's become a commonplace thing. But before the Baal Shem Tov, actually the more common understanding that you find by most of the Rishonim was actually that no, with most creatures, with all creatures other than people, you have Hashgacha Klolis. Hashem looks after the species as a whole, that it shouldn't go extinct, but not necessarily that each individual one, that there's individual Hashgacha on it. In fact, the Rambam, for example, mentions in Moreh Nevuchim, he mentions there are some people who have the idea that every creature has Hashgacha Pratis over it, and the Rambam is Sholo, the whole thing. So the Meiri says in our connection, we say over here, kinah b'maaseh bereishis, that's what we mean. He says, in other words, that you're expressing the idea that there is a hashgacha pratis on each individual bird, and it's not so. So now, after the Baal Shem Tov taught us otherwise, then we wouldn't understand it that way. But that's how the Meiri understood it in his time. Anyway, the other explanation, because by saying that Hashem has rachmanus on the bird's nest, you're saying that Hashem's midos, that Hashem's mitzvahs are because of rachmin, the ein and elogzeris, and they're not. They're gzeris on us, as Rashi phrases it, the mitzvahs are there to inform us that we are Hashem's servants and we have to follow what Hashem said, what Hashem says, even if there are things that the goyim would disagree with and claim that, you know, that there's no reason behind it. We say we don't need a reason. The fact that the Eibishter says it is reason enough. So therefore, now when you're saying davening, you're saying that this is because of rachamim, then you're giving a reason where it's not appropriate. So one second, we'll talk. There's a lot to talk about this, but fine, go ahead. Yeah, what does Anafi Yosef say? Yeah.
He says it's sort of like he's telling that Hashem is more than a babe. First, Hashem has a first, then the babe.
Okay.
Meaning, he's saying that it's alive in a way.
Right, of course. Of course, Hashem has. But so he says, actually, right. I mean, he says that actually Hashem has rachmanos on the animals as well. After all, you have Anaf Yosef, mentions from a medrash that Hashem does have rachmanos on a person and also on animals, because we see that animals also, you can only bring them as a korban after 8 days. And also, you have the mitzvah of Oisev Eskenai. So, the same way you're saying that also. So, right. But, I don't think he's making that point. He's just saying. That Hashem's Rachmanos is on everything, so therefore there's no reason. Well, yeah, fine. He ends up saying that, Iker Rachmanos Allah Adam, Anyway, there is a lot of discussion about this because, in particular, so the Rambam mentions this Gemara in Moreh Nevuchim, and he says that the fact is throughout Moreh Nevuchim, the Rambam is trying to find reasons for mitzvahs. And when it comes to Shiloh HaKan, he says that is the reason because Hashem has Rachmanos on the bird. So then he says, so how does that fit with our Mishnah over here? So he says our Mishnah is only according to one opinion. The other opinion would say that you do try to find reasons for mitzvahs. We find in Shas, for example, that Rav Shimon, Darshin and Taima Dekra, that Rav Shimon regularly holds that we try to find the reasons behind mitzvahs and to figure out on that basis when the particular details of the mitzvah and when it applies and so forth. So the Rambam says our Mishnah would be only a Das Yochid, so therefore you don't need to necessarily worry about it. Right, but the point is, in other words, that here we're saying that even the ones that on the face of it you could find reasons for, the reason is ultimately because of Xavier. Anyway, so that's what the Rambam writes. Then the Ramban disagrees with the Rambam in turn. He says, no, you can't just write off the Mishnah as a Das Yochid, but what you can say is that the Rachmanus is it's more that we should develop a sense of Rachmanus, not so much that Hashem has more Rachmanus on the bird than on anything else, but rather that Hashem wants us to develop a sense of Rachmanus, and therefore he gave us that mitzvah. Then the Maharal has a long discussion about it in one of his Sfarim, in Teferes Yisrael, and he explains, yet further, he says another way of understanding it is when you're saying over here that you're making that Hashem's mitzvahs are mitzad rachim and ve'in and alexeris, he says what it means is all of Hashem's, you would think that Hashem's mitzvahs, or at least some of them, come mitzad Hashem's midah of rachim. No, he says all the mitzvahs, when we say over here ein and alexeris, it means all of them really come from Hashem's attribute of din. The Alter Rebbe actually makes a somewhat similar point in one of the Igros in Tanya, where he says over there that when we speak about the Torah being given by Pia Gvura, that Torah is an expression of Gvura in the sense that therefore most, if not all mitzvahs, have a finite measure for them. So the Maharal seems to be saying somewhat the same idea, that the mitzvahs are really mitzad Hashem's midas ha-din rather than midas ha-rachamim, and therefore it's inappropriate to express otherwise over here. That said, though, there are a lot of the Mechoshim who explain that maybe the problem is only saying it in davening. Maybe to darshan it, maybe to like the Rambam is doing in Mor Nebuchim, to darshan a reason for it as part of learning Torah, that would be valid. But to say it in davening is not appropriate. So the Gemara tells, Ahud Nochis Hamed Rabba, there was a person once davening by the Amud in front of Rabba, but Omar, and he says this line from the Mishnah, Ata chasta ala keinu kansiper, you had Rachmanus on the nest, chus v'rachem aleinu, so please have Rachmanus on us. Omer Rabba, so Rabba says, Kama yoda hait surva me rabbonam la ratsuri lamore. Look how well this young Tamid Chacham knows to appease Hashem. Look what a nice tefillah he came up with. Omer Abayev Omer Shakhtin oise tnan, so Abayev says, what do you mean? Omer Mishnah says that you may tell him to be quiet. And the Gemara says, V'rabba nami l'chaduri l'abayev hu deboi. As a matter of fact, Rabba was not really complimenting the guy. He was only doing that in order to test Abayev to see how sharp Abayev is, whether he's going to pick it up. Now, a number of the Mephoshim ask, the Amoraim are expected to know all the Mishnayos. So what's the L'chadudi? What is he going to do? How is testing him to see whether Abaye knows of a Fedush and Mishnah? How is that L'chadudi? So there's a few different explanations. The Tzlach brings a couple of explanations. One of them, he says, is that in the Mishnah, it only says, he says, Al-Kan Sipo Yagir Rachamecha. So maybe you could understand that it means, if you're just saying that without adding because of that, chus v'rachem aleinu, then maybe it would be inappropriate. But maybe if the person is adding like this guy does, therefore chus v'rachem aleinu, then maybe you could have thought that maybe the Mishnah allows it, and therefore Rabbi wanted to see if Abaye is going to pick up on that. And the Tzlachim again then gives a slightly different answer based on the Yerushalmi that says something like you could have where a person is saying this more as a complaint. Hashem, you have rachmanos on the birds. Why aren't you having rachmanos on me? So then you could say, obviously, that's an inappropriate thing to say, especially in Tefillah B'Tzibur. But maybe if he's just asking that Hashem should have Rachmanus, maybe that would be appropriate. So Rabba wanted to see if Abaye is going to pick up on that and realize, no, the Mishnah says generically, and the Mishnah even says, Meshach Kenosi, tell him right away to be quiet. In other words, we're not even going to wait to see what he says afterwards. Just as soon as he says, Al-Kan Sipo Yagir Rachmecha, then you know he's saying something wrong and you tell him to be quiet. Therefore, that implies it doesn't matter what he says afterwards, whether he's saying it as a complaint, whether he's saying it as a tefillah or whatever, and therefore Rabbi wanted to see if Abaye is going to pick up on that thing. Okay. Since we're talking about that, we're talking about people that say something in davening that's inappropriate. By the way, with that said, though, Marsha says that no, when it says Meshach Kenoise, doesn't necessarily mean that you tell him to be quiet right there in the middle of his davening. You don't want to disturb him, and then he's going to forget where he is and be unable to continue. Marsha learns that it just means Meshach Kenoise, we tell him in the future, don't do that again. But the Tzlach obviously is not learning that way. He's learning that it means that you actually tell him right on the spot to be quiet. So the Gemara tells another example. Ahu d'noches kamed Rav Chanina, a person was once davening by the Amud in front of Rav Chanina. The Omar, and he says in the first bracha of Shemoneh Esrei, when we say Hokei l'gadol l'gibur v'anerda, he starts saying a whole bunch of other praises of Hashem. Hokei l'gadol l'gibur v'anerda, Hashem was great and powerful and awesome. V'ha adir and the mighty, v'ha amitz and the strong, v'ha izos and the powerful, ha amiti, the true one, v'ha yorui, the one who should be feared, ha chazak, the mighty one, v'ha vadai, the one who's certain, v'ha nichbar, and the one who's in, and the honorable. So a whole catalog of things. Well, I mean, back then they didn't have Siddur and Bechlal. Everybody davened by heart. But Okay. So Rav Chanina waited until the guy finished. Again, Marsha says you don't necessarily want to interrupt him in the middle so as not to make him lose his focus. But after he finished, he see him. When he finished, Amale, Rav Chanina tells him, what do you think? What do you think? You've said all the possible shvachim you could for your master? Why do you need to say that many? Hashta Uma Anan Hani Twas Damrinan Godla Givanura. You should know something. Even these three that we say, when we say our Godla Givanura, we wouldn't say them on our own. Ilav Damrinu Moshe Rabbeinu Baraisa. Were it not for the fact that Moshe says these three things in the Torah in Parshas Ekev, but also Anshek Nesagurla, which Akminu Batfila, and later on the Anshek Nesagurla established that we should say it in davening which actually that doesn't just mean that they established. So there's actually two different ways of learning. Rashi over here learns, we don't mean so much that they established it in Shemoneh Esrei. That is true, that the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah established Shemoneh Esrei. But what we mean is something else also. The Anshei Knesset HaGdolah were the first ones since Moshe Rabbeinu's times to use all three of these terms for Hashem again. And you have in parenthesis over here, it mentions something from Yuma Perek Baloi. So the Gemara explains there that what happened was, and also in Sanhedrin, that what happened was, in the Torah, Moshe uses these three phrases, okay, la God, la Gibbana. Then many years later, Yirmiyahu was davening shortly before the Churban, and he addresses Hashem, Hakel HaGodol VaHanora, and he leaves out the word Gibber. And the Gemara says, why? Because he's saying, the Goyim are prancing around in the Heichol, they're on the verge of destroying it. How can we call Hashem Gibber? Hashem is not showing his power. Later on, Daniel, a couple of decades later, is also davening for the Golos to be over, and he says he uses Hakel Hagadol Hagibur, and he leaves out the word Vahanor. And the Gemara explains because he said the Goyim are subjugating the Jewish people. So how can we say where is Hashem's Noros? How is Hashem showing his awesomeness? Then along came the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, and the Gemara says Achziru Atara LeYoshna. They restored the crown to the way that it's supposed to be because they said Adraba. The very fact that Hashem sees the Goyim prancing around and destroying the Heichel and doesn't take revenge on them right on the spot, that shows his Gvura that he's able, that he holds back his anger until the appropriate time. And the fact that we Jewish people are living in Golus and still surviving, keeps one sheep among 70 wolves, as the expression in the Medrash, shows Hashem's awesomeness that's how we still continue. So therefore, they put those back. So therefore, when they said a tefillah, they're over there in Sefer Nehemiah, they said all three phrases, okay, la gadol agibur anura, and then in turn, they said that we should do that in Shemoneh Esrei. So now Rav Chanina is telling the Schazen, we didn't come up with the idea of saying these three things on our own, only because Moshe Rabbeinu gave us the precedent to say it, and the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah explain why in future generations we should say it. If not for that, Anan lo hava aminan. If not for that, we wouldn't have the break type to say it ourselves, because how can we even begin to praise and describe Hashem? So what are you doing? You're giving Hashem all these praises that you just, this whole catalog that you just said? You should realize, Moshe l'melech basav adam, shayim ashabachim oisei, the elef alofim dinrei kesef. Imagine you have a king who they're praising him. He has 1,000,000 silver dinar. V'hoyu l'elef alofim dinrei zahav. Really, he has 1,000,000 gold dinars. Wouldn't it be a gnai? Wouldn't it be a shameful thing to even speak of that he has silver when he has gold, which is qualitatively so much different? Not just the camus that he has more money, but be'echos, it's a whole different quality. So the same thing, in other words, you give Akosiv explains over here and Marsha explains in a little more detail. The point is, in other words, that you're coming up with all these shvachim of your own, of Hashem, but all of those are like human level shvachim. So those are like silver compared to the actual shvachim that Hashem is really entitled to, which are like they're be'echos, in quality, they're completely different. They're like gold compared to silver. So therefore, so don't do that, in other words. So the first three are like gold, the rest of them are like silver compared to that. There are some Mephoshim actually who explain that the Gnai Huloi doesn't refer to Hashem, but rather to the person. That he's telling him, a person who doesn't realize the difference between the Shvachim that are appropriate to Hashem, the ones that Moshe Rabbeinu and Anshei Knesset HaGdolah use, versus all the other ones that you just came up with, is the equivalent of a person who doesn't know the difference between gold and silver. What a derogatory thing, what a shameful thing it would be that a person doesn't understand that difference. With that said, though, so this halacha is brought in the Torah and Shulchan Aruch about that you're not allowed to add more than okay, la God, la Gibra Vanura. On the other hand, we have many other places in Davening where we do say all kinds of shvachim of Hashem. We have a whole piyutim that are just praises of Hashem. Haderes v'hamuna, for example, the Beis Yosef mentions in this connection a piyut from the famous Paitan of Shlomo ibn Gviral called Keser Malchus. In some kehillas, they say on Yom Kippur, and those are full of all kinds of praises of Hashem far beyond what this chazan said. So one explanation is, in fact, that we're talking over here in Shemoneh Esrei, but it's not appropriate, but at other times, it's fine. And there are different other explanations. There can be a difference between when you're davening to Hashem versus when you're saying or singing praises of Hashem. There's all kinds of distinctions. So singing them is not right. So for example, Haderes Famuna is not, I mean, obviously it's in the Siddur. So in that sense, it's part of davening, but it's not really that when we talk about davening in Gemara terminology, tefillah means Shemana Esrei, when you're actually standing in front of Hashem and addressing him. Haderes Famuna is less like that. Therefore, there's no issue with that. And the same thing with Keser Malchus, and the same thing with other such piyotim, which are full of all kinds of praises for Hashem. So one point is, because you're not actually speaking and directly addressing Hashem, rather you're reinforcing by yourself the greatness of Hashem in as you do when you're learning, or as you do when you're singing or talking or whatever, and therefore that's fine. Right, but again, that's not tefillah per se. That's a preparation for tefillah. That's part of the Shah Achas Kodim tefillah that we were talking about before. So that's fine. But to actually add Shvachim of Hashem when you're speaking directly to Hashem, when you're davening directly to Hashem, the Gemara is saying over here is not so appropriate. The Gemara continues in this connection.
When you go to a little bit of different shul, they open up sometimes the Rosh Manasseh. They have all different kinds of things. Never say this.
What do you mean, different nesos?
Different nesos. If you open up, and that's totally different.
Yes,
bring yours.
I mean,
they have a different, totally different.
Okay, so I mean,
had a lot of stuff.
Right. So I mean, the poskim talk about the details about changing nesos. I mean, you have a few different considerations because to change your nusach is not so simple because your nusach is considered a form of neder. And to the extent that you can, they talk about, for example, you can change from nusach Ashkenaz to Sfarad because nusach Sfarad is more precise, and from nusach Sfarad to nusach Ari for the same reason, but not in the other direction, unless you're matu neder. You also have to, on the other hand, if you're davening betzibur, if you're davening by the omud, it's different because then you have issues of lotus go to do. But if you're davening still a shmina esrei, you're daven, your own nusach, and that's that. So when it comes to the hoicher, if you happen to be davening by the omud in such a place, then yeah, you would probably have to follow their nusach, if nothing else, so that you're not causing machlokes. But if you're davening shtil shmona esrei, then it's fine. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so. Right. Okay. Fine. Okay. Okay. Since we mentioned what Rav Chanina is saying about the praises of Hashem, so the Gemara brings another vote from Rav Chanina. Amar Rav Chanina, Hakol bidei shemayim chutz miyiras shemayim. Everything in a person's life is in Hashem's hands. Meaning, Rashi describes whether the person is tall or short, rich or poor, etc., etc. All of those are predetermined by Hashem. But except for yiras shemayim, tzaddik v'rosha, whether a person is one or the other, that a person puts in Hashem's hands. So here Rashi uses the expression that Hashem puts it in a person's hands and gives him two ways in front of him. He has to choose Yiras Shemayim. And then in parenthesis over here, they bring Rashi from Megillah, where also you have the same verse of Rav Chanina's, and Rashi says it a little bit differently. We learned a couple of days ago. The fact that we said that Hashem really has it in His power to make us have exclusively a Yetzer Tov, and we'll also love by Hashem promises to do just that. But right now, we're not at that point yet. Right now, even though Hashem has that ability, He doesn't exercise that ability. He leaves it in our hands to do the right thing. So Shenemar, as the pasuk says, "Va'ati Yisrael, Ma Hashem lekecha shoyel mi'imach." What is Hashem asking of you? Kiim liyira b'gomer, but only to fear Hashem. So therefore we see Hashem has to ask it of us because, so to speak, He can't do it Himself. Not that He can't. He said in the Gemara the other day, and Rashi stresses over here that He could, but Hashem chooses, He set up the world in such a way that He doesn't. The Tzlach actually has a very interesting vote on why he says, why the word shoyel? If it means that Hashem is requesting of us, then the usual expression would be mevakish. Ma Hashem alakecha mevakish. So why the word shoyel? He says an interesting word. The word shoyel literally means when you borrow something, you're a shoyel. So it means every other mitzvah, he says, Hashem first gives you the resources to do the mitzvah, and then you do it. So it's like Hashem gave you the resources, now you owe Hashem one, and you have to go do that mitzvah. Yiras Shemayim was saying Hashem leaves it up to you, so to speak. You're the one who takes the initiative. You're the one who's lending Hashem. You're the one who's lending something to Hashem, and Hashem is, so to speak, borrowing it from you. So therefore, it uses the expression shoyel. And he goes on to say, in that case, now we know, in Lashon Kodesh, you have two different words for borrowing something. In English, you talk about borrowing somebody's car, or you're talking about borrowing money, and you use the same word, even though the money, you don't give back the same money, but the car, hopefully you do. But in Lashon Kodesh, you have different words for those. Borrowing something to where you're going to return the same thing is called shoyel. Borrowing something where you're not going to return the same thing is called loiver. So he says the vote is over here, schar mitzvah mitzvah. The schar of Yiras Shemayim itself is an essential part of the mitzvah. And therefore, in that sense, you're, so to speak, lending it to Hashem, and Hashem eventually will return the very same thing to you. Therefore, the expression shoyel, he says. So now the Gemara asks, Otu Yiro, Yiras Shemayim milsa zutra sihi? Is Yiras Shemayim such a small thing that Moshe is telling the people, Mo Hashem alekecha shoyel mihimach? The only thing Hashem keeps in his treasuries is his secret treasury is the treasure of Yiras Shemayim. As the pasuk says, the fear of Hashem is his treasure. So how can you call that a small thing? And the answer is Ain, yes, Lagabin Moshe, Milsa Zutrasihi, relative to Moshe, it is considered a small thing. So, of course, we know what the Alter Rebbe explains in Perek Membeis of Tanya, that it means that every year that has a nitzutz of Moshe Rabbeinu within him, and relative to that nitzutz, Yira is indeed something very easy to achieve. So now what you have to do is you have to arouse that nitzutz and make it into something that actually affects you. And so the Gemara continues, it's like a moshel of a person, they ask of him to give a big keli. The Yeshloy, if he has that big keli available, doima olive kikli cotton, then he feels like it's only a small thing because he has it easily available, so it's a small thing for him. Cotton ve'enloy, but if you ask him for a small keli and he doesn't have it, doima olive kikli godol, then it feels to him like a big keli. So the same way, in other words, the fact that Yiras Shemayim is so easily accessible to Moshe Rabbeinu and through him to us makes it like a kli, makes it, even though it's a kli gadol, it's a big thing. We're saying it's the only thing that Hashem keeps in his treasury. Nevertheless, relative to that, it's considered a kli cotton. Marsha explains over here at some length that the moshel is, we know there are different kinds of yira. There's yira, the lowest kind of yira, where a person is afraid, I won't do avedis because Hashem will punish me. That's a level of yira which is compared to a kli cotton. Then you have a yira that comes from seichel, that comes from that you realize that you start realizing how great and how powerful and how awesome Hashem is. That's the kind of that kind of yira is considered is compared in the moshel over here to a big keli. So we're saying over here that when it comes to the first kind of yira, Marsha explains, to a certain extent that is in Hashem's hands, because he brings from other Gemaras that Hashem causes disasters to happen in the world in order that we Jewish people should take notice and do tshuva. Which, by the way, is a lesson in itself. It means, you know, when you open the newspapers, to the extent that anybody even reads newspapers anymore, or you look on the internet and whatever, and you hear about this flood in that place, and this earthquake in the other place, and this train derailment in yet another place, and whatever. The point is, the Gemara is saying in Yevamos, it's meant for you as a yid to take notice and be afraid and do tshuva. And the Gemara actually brings a pasuk in Tzfanya that bears out that idea. Hashem says that I cause disasters and punishments and whatever to happen to the Goyim. And I just thought to myself, Hashem says that you Jewish people will see and take Musa from it. So now, to that extent then, so in other words, the lowest level of Yira is that a person should think to himself, if Hashem has the power to cause that to happen to some faraway people that I don't know anything about, then Hashem has the power to do it to me also, so I better do tshuva. So to that extent, Maharshal says that level of yira is to a certain extent in Hashem's hands. On the other hand, the higher kind of yira, which comes from understanding about the greatness of Hashem, that is the kind that's purely in a person's hands. That's the kind that we're saying Hashem puts in his treasury because it's a precious thing to Hashem. So now we're asking, the Gemara is asking that kind of thing. How is that milsa zutrasi? How is that a small thing? The first kind of yira, sure, it's a small thing. But the second one that comes from contemplating the greatness of Hashem, how can you call that a small thing? And the answer is, Maharsha says, then the Gemara's answer is, when we say Lagabi Moshe, we mean that Moshe himself, the Jewish people were afraid of him, not because he's going to punish them. They were afraid of him because they saw the rays of light on his face. So therefore, so now Moshe is telling them the same way as you could understand with Seichel how great I became on Har Sinai, and therefore you're afraid to approach me. Now use that kind of mentality to also be afraid of Hashem on that level as well. Yiras Tichlis rather than just Yiras Ha'oinash. And therefore he's saying now that you have this experience with me, then it can be considered Milsa Zutrasi. There's many, many other different explanations what this means, how if for Moshe himself it's a Milsa Zutrasi, how could it be one for us? So Eitz Yosef brings another one as well. He says that for a person who's onav, then it would be easy to achieve Yira. But for a person who hasn't developed that yet, then it might be hard to. Now Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah tells us on him that he was onav mikol adam. He didn't think of himself as onav mikol adam. He thought of himself as that essentially he's shuffle, he's lowly. Which, you know, it explains in Chassidus, doesn't mean that he didn't know how great he is, but he knew that somebody else with his capabilities would have been able to accomplish even more. So he didn't think of himself as an onav. Therefore, he figures if it's so easy for me to achieve Yiras Hashem, then it must be easy enough for anybody else to as well, because there are, after all, people out there who develop a sense of anivus. The Mishnah goes on to so since we mentioned about saying moidim moidim, and we say that if a chazan, if a person in general says moidim moidim, we tell them to be quiet. So in that connection, the Gemara mentions by the same token, if a person says shma shma, then it's also no good. So the Gemara says and the brises meshak, you know, say that again, we tell them to be quiet. So the Gemara asks, basically, we have a brisa that says a kodesh shema v'kofla, how does a meguna v'chola, that if a person repeats shema, then he's meguna, it's a shameful thing to do, but not that we tell him to be quiet. And then the Gemara, so the Gemara answer is that there's a difference between whether he says each word twice versus whether he says the whole pasuk and then repeats the whole pasuk again. It's machlokas who's showing him which is which. One way of looking at it is that saying the whole pasuk and then repeating it again makes it look as though he believes in two gods, therefore mashakinos. So we were saying each word twice, shma, shma, Yisrael, Yisrael, Hashem, Hashem, is just being silly. So therefore, according to that, it's meguna, it's a shameful thing for him to do, but not mashakin. And then there are Rishonim him will learn the other way. Anyway, the Gemara says, so if he says the whole pasuk twice, what's the problem? After all, maybe the first time he didn't have kavana, and then afterwards he was able to have kavana. So what's wrong if he says the pasuk twice? Why would he be meshak, you know, or call him meguna or whatever? Abaya answers, chavrusa klapi shmaya. What are you treating Hashem like your friend? Like you just talk casually and you don't put some thought into the words you're saying? Or Marsha says, Chavrusa Klap Ishmaya, you make it look like there are two gods, you make it look like you believe in first one and then the other. Me Ika, how could there be such a thing? Let me tell you something. Eloi Kivin Daita Me Ikra, if a person doesn't have Kavana in the first place, the first time he says Shema, Machinim Leib Marzakta Benafa, we should hit him with a blacksmith's hammer, Adam Chavin Daita, until he has Kavana. In other words, don't play around. You can't play games like that. You didn't have Kavana, so therefore I didn't have Kavana, and therefore I have no choice but to say it again. Have Kavana in the first place, the first time. Well, yeah. I mean, to that extent, actually, it says in Shulchan Aruch, if Taki, you said the first pasuk of Shema, without Kavana, you Taki should repeat it, but you should do it quietly so that you don't have the problem of Mechzik Eshtei Rishuris. No, not the Chazan, right, yeah. Ben Yehoyada actually says a cute word. He says, why is Abayim Davka mentioning a blacksmith's hammer? He says, because you think about it, if you take a piece of iron and you bang on it with a hammer, nothing's going to happen unless you first soften it, you soften it with heat. Then the hammer will do some good. The same way, he says, the heat represents the Yiras Shemayim that we just said a person has to have. So first, a person has to have a certain sense of Yiras Shemayim, then you can bang on him with a hammer to straighten him out so that in the future he'll have Kavana and Shema like he's supposed to. Yom Yom Mashiach Ogo'ola, Ches, no, Zion, what is today, Zion or Ches? Zion, yes, Olivia. So the Rebbe talked about the taker from Yad right away, Mamish, Hashem will, as the Pasuk says, Hashem will again stretch out his hand and collect all the dispersed Jewish people and then the dispersed of Yehuda from all the four corners of the earth and bring them all back together and come back together with them. And this begins with, the Rebbe said, from the Suda of Motzei Shabbos Kodesh, which is the Suda of David Malka Mashiach, and even more important, that we'll have that Suda of Malach Malka with David Malka Mashiach at the head. Because even before that, on Shabbos, we'll be able to come, Imanai Nishmaya, back to Eretz Yisrael, because as the Gemara explains in Erevin, there's no Tchumen higher than 10 Tfachim, so we'd be able to travel to Eretz Yisrael even on Shabbos. And we'll go to Aretzeinu HaKadosha, to Yerushalayim HaKodesh, to the Holy Mountain, to the Beis Mikdash, and even to the Kodesh HaKadosh. Even on Shabbos, yeah. Somebody asked me recently, by the way, what does that mean to go to the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Even in the regular times, the Kohen Gadol, only the Kohen Gadol goes in there. So one answer, I think, might be that Eber was referring to the fact we know that workmen are allowed to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim when necessary to fix things. Very well, then. Any Yid, in principle, can be one of those workmen who was sent into the Kodesh HaKadoshim to repair things. Or yeah, anything that needs fixing.
I asked the question.
What?
I asked this question.
Yeah. Yeah. Guys, we want to hear. Right. Thank you. Okay, halacha real quick. Okay, let's do halacha real quick. If you pick up a fruit or something to eat it, you make a bracha, and then it fell down, and before you had a chance to eat it, now you can't eat it. Or the same thing, you can make a bracha on a cup of something, and it spills. Please keep it on mute unless you want to ask something. Or so if you have something else of that same min and you were planning to eat more of it, then the bracha covers it all. So you wouldn't have to make a second bracha. Otherwise, the bracha only covers what you had in your hand. So you would have to make a second bracha. And the same thing also, if you didn't have it, if you intended to eat more and you didn't have it in front of you, then you would have to make the second bracha. Even if you have a case, for example, where you would have made the bracha on the first one and eaten it and it would have covered the second one, but here where you didn't end up eating the first one, then you do in fact have to make a second bracha. So the only way you don't have to make a second one is where you have more of the same min in front of you. You intended to eat it, then it's covered by the bracha, even though the first one fell down and got damaged or whatever, and you can't eat it anymore. That's the point. In other words, if you have another one in front of you and you intended to eat that one, then it'll be covered by the original bracha. You don't have to make another one, but otherwise not. Okay.